Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, April 5th, 2018. I'm your host, Julie Copins, in the studio here with our producer, Scott Burton. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, Kathy Ruddy and Jonas Lamb will preview the Friends of the UAS Egan Library Authors Reception. We'll talk about Partners in Healing, a film that explores healing partnerships between Western and alternative medicine. Ben Huff and Mo Michaels will preview their first Friday show, highlighting the Juno Icefield Research Project. John DeCherney will highlight the wines of Clink, and you'll find out what else is happening in the weekend in the arts with Nancy DeCherney. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juno Afternoon. The latest from the National Weather Service, we'll have increasing clouds tonight with a low around 31.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Typically, cholera is associated with tropical destinations, but recently the bacteria that causes the disease was linked to subsistence herring eggs in British Columbia. The Canadian Department of Fisheries issued an emergency closure. There are no easy answers to address what caused the outbreak, but as Southeast Alaska tribes get ready to gather the traditional food, it's left some people wondering about the future. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Jeff Felpausch thinks it's only a matter of days until the herring will spawn in the bay. And he's already taken measures to make sure the Sitka tribe of Alaska, where he works, doesn't miss out. The hemlock branches are already in the water, ready for the herring to deposit their eggs. It's an important time for First Nations people in Canada, too. Herring eggs are a beloved subsistence food. But as of March 23rd, there were at least 3 confirmed cases of people feeling ill after eating them near Vancouver Island. The lab results that came back were unusual. Disease-causing Vibrio cholera doesn't typically originate in developed countries, like Canada. Felpausch says the news about the herring eggs came as a surprise.
Yeah, you know, it's something I haven't heard of before, and, it initially got me thinking, you know, is this something that we're going to see region-wide?
According to the First Nations Health Authority, the bacteria was likely limited to the area. Kate Helfrich with the Alaska Department of Epidemiology says in this case, there's still a lot we don't know.
So if you Google search definition of cholera, what you're going to come up with is it's a gastrointestinal illness that creates crazy epidemics. But really, we don't know yet if we're talking about cholera.
So to back up a little, Vibrio is basically this big category of bacteria. What was discovered in the herring eggs in British Columbia was Vibrio cholera, a subcategory, which can seem pretty scary.
But within that species of Vibrio cholerae, there are more than 200 serogroups.
Helfrich says only 2 of those groups are commonly associated with what you might think of when you think of cholera. And so far, health agencies in Canada haven't been able to pin that down. It's usually linked to fecal matter contaminating the water. In an emailed statement, Vancouver Island Health Authority said an investigation was underway. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Seattle Times reports Denise Juneau has been selected to be the next superintendent of Seattle Public Schools. The school board voted Wednesday to hire Juneau, who will reportedly be the city's first Native American superintendent. A member of the Mandan Hidatsa tribes and a descendant of the Blackfeet tribe, she served as Montana's superintendent of public instruction. She also ran as the Democratic challenger for Montana's U.S. House seat in 2016, the loss to now Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Pending contract negotiations, Juneau is expected to take the position in July. Attorneys in a Native American voter ID case in North Dakota say plaintiffs have achieved a victory. A federal court ruled this week to allow for expanded IDs for Native Americans. The decision allows tribal addresses like P.O. boxes to be used to prove residency and permits the types of IDs voters at the polls can use, which can include documents, letters, enrollment cards, or other forms of identification issued by a tribal or federal authority in lieu of IDs until final resolution of the case. Plaintiffs say North Dakota's voter ID law discriminates against Native Americans and creates voting obstacles. The Muscogee Creek Nation in Oklahoma filed a lawsuit this week against opioid makers and distributors, claiming they failed to prevent the flow of opioids into the tribe. The lawsuit is one of the latest filed by tribes across the country. Others in Wisconsin and South Dakota have filed similar suits over impacts of opioid abuse in their communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, gateway to tribal colleges created by and for American Indians, accredited and local, with certificate programs to master's degree programs. Info at aihec.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country, and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on KTOO. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now with a couple, I would say, literary luminaries of our community. This is Kathy Ruddy. She's the president of the Friends of the Egan Library out at UAS, and faculty member Jonas Lamb. They're here to tell us about a special event happening tomorrow evening, the UAS Authors Reception. Kathy and Jonas, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for the invitation. Okay. Yeah, we'd love to tell people about the reception tomorrow night at the University Library. Begins at 5 o'clock, and it's hosted by the Friends of the UAS Egan Library, which is a fabulous library and deserves fun and support. And there'll be the reception and honoring of about a dozen and a half of the faculty members who have published or created something significant in the last 12 months.
That's a lot of publishing activity coming right out of our own backyard here at UAS. Maybe, Jonas, do you want to tell us about a couple of the authors who will be featured or faculty who will be featured?
Sure. Each year we try to invite some brief remarks from one of the faculty who have published. And this year, Allison Bidlack, who is involved with the Alaska Coastal Research Center, ACRC, that's a lot easier, at UAS. The partnership between the U.S. Forest Service and UAS. She's published a handful of research papers this year, and so she's going to make brief remarks sort of outlining the relationship between ACRC and UAS. I was really curious to see one of the poster presentation that she put together. She has worked with a collaborator to make onboard water monitoring on the Alaska State ferries happen. So now there's this ongoing research project where water samples are being taken aboard those vessels to help sort of document changes to the coastal environment.
Wow.
So hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about
Interesting.
That.
Interesting. Okay. And in addition to her?
Oh, we've got, there's like 20 faculty members that published in the last year.
Jan Straley was on the list that I remember, the whale lady. And Lance Twitchell, Hune, and Ishmael Hope are the ones that I remember, too.
Yeah, and some folks may have had the opportunity. I think there was a story on K2 about the Alaska Quarterly Review. They commissioned a work of art that was a collaboration between Lance Twitchell and Emily Wall, in which Emily read a birth poem, and Lance sort of responded using a birth with his own birth poem in Tlingit. And it was produced by a local a UAS graduate as a film, as a short film, and they're going to actually do a live performance of that at the event. So
at
the closure
night.
Of
Great.
The reception tomorrow night.
Right.
So.
Great.
Now,
Great.
You would expect at UAS, you talked about the Coastal Studies Project and, of course, Native Studies. I mean, these are areas that you would really expect authors and faculty to be, you know, busy publishing. Are there any sort of out-of-left-field work that maybe we wouldn't expect coming out of UAS?
Well,
poetry, perhaps one.
I'd say I'm really excited about Michael Boyer. He has a NOLO guide to being a landlord. It's like all you ever needed to know about being a landlord. And for those that know Michael, he's got a great sense of humor, and it really comes out in a very practical way in this guide that the second edition has just come out. There's a section that documents the health benefits of landlording and gives all the different the amount of calories that you will burn shoveling snow or mopping a kitchen floor. So that's a really interesting piece of work. Other than that, there's a history, a World War II history from the Polish perspective, coming from a Ketchikan faculty member, John Radzilowski, that looks intriguing. A new book of his called, I think it's called Frantic Seven. Yeah, but a lot of it's, you know, scholarship in the fields that our faculty are experts in, and it's just a great opportunity to hang out in the library. There's appetizers and beverages, an invitation for folks to join the Friends of the Egan Library Network. Right. You basically become a friend of UAS and then a friend of the Egan Library, and that gets you a 25% discount on certain University of Alaska Press titles for the year of your membership, and an invitation to this annual event, which is members only, but at the door you may join us and
right.
become a member.
And you said how much it was, Kathy? It's a big ticket price, I'm
it's
sure.
It's $15 a year to be a friend of the UAS Egan Library, or lifetime membership for $200.
Okay. And you put your own time and energy behind this. This is obviously a group and a project and a library that you have great affection for. Tell me, what do you feel like is the significance of Egan Library in our community? You said it's been around about 25 years now?
Well, 28 years ago, it was a big hole in the ground. You know, I mean, it was hard.
No books in it, I assume. No, there were no books. Okay.
There was a hole in the ground, and it was astounding to see that library come together. And I remember going to the dedication of the library, and then 25 years later, there was a celebration of the 25 years, and all of the formaldehyde in the carpets had off-gassed, you know, within the... within the first 3 years.
I
think it's important to support our libraries, and this tomorrow night is going to be a really fun reception, and where I just encourage people to come. Any thought leaders, you need to support libraries. We need these libraries, and it's going to be a very fun event tomorrow night, 5 o'clock at UAS Egan Library.
Wonderful. And the library, as you suggested, it's not just a repository for books. You know, this library is in the technological age, just like the rest of us. There are a lot of great tools there, but also a gathering place for people, thoughtful people, to come and exchange ideas. And it's also been a performance venue. I know
that's
I've attended
right.
concerts
Jazz
there.
Jazz and Classics has done lots of concerts there.
Right.
And Lyle James and his group have done lots of performances there, too.
Right. What a community asset.
Mm-hmm.
We host about 20 events a year, and recently we held the second annual Lead the Change Youth Summit, which was incredible. About 200 high school students come out during the day, and that's put together by AWARE, I think, in the Juno Yeah, I can't remember who the other partners are. Sorry there. But so it's an exciting place to gather and hear lectures and hear about the research that's going on in the community. And this event will just be a great opportunity for folks to chat with the people that are doing the research, that are publishing scholarly research, that are your friends and neighbors anyhow. So there's no egos. Come hang out and enjoy.
Sounds like fun. Now, Jonas, you and I are about the same age. We're Gen Xers, right? You're a little younger. You're younger than me, but...
For the sake of the argument.
Consider yourself. So, like, when we were growing up, libraries were where you would go to check out books,
sure.
right? And now you've come of age professionally when the purposes of libraries has completely changed and revolutionized. And what do you see as the role of Egan Library now at UAS in our community, aside from being a nice space to hear music or to gather? Why do we need to support it? Why is it important?
Well, I mean, it's one of the last sort of public forums for just having intellectual discourse. I mean, we have students in our library all the time, and we're sort of like the third place. We're not the classroom. We're not home where they're studying, but we're a place where they're doing that in a very public manner. We're there to interact with them. I have conversations every day with students about, like, careers, about how I got to do what I'm doing, about what they're doing for internships. I feel like we're really a support place for these students, and we build relationships in the community. At the community level, libraries are just sort of it's a community space where you're not going to get shushed in a library these days. Like, come into the Egan Library, it is a little bit of quiet in there, but we encourage people to have conversations, meet with your peers, meet with your friends, talk with your instructors when you see them. If you've been into the Valley Library lately, that place, that's
it's
where conversations
happening.
Are happening.
It's lively.
Teenagers are gathering. It's a safe place in the community, and everybody's welcome. I think that is foundational to libraries, and it remains today.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, Kathy, for you, I know you've been an author yourself. When you go to these receptions, is there a little bit of a danger? You get bit by the bug? You're like, oh, okay, what's my next? Now I need to come out with something. Is there a bit of an author envy that sets in?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, my only book is Peter Metcalf. I just assisted with it, and it's called Dangerous Idea. With the Alaska Native Brotherhood. But no, I do not have any publications in the works. I remember Dick Danhauer could write a poem about anything, and every once in a while I think, oh, I could do that. And so we're having an event for Dick Danhauer next Tuesday. Would have been his 76th birthday. So
nice.
In any event, how about you? You've published.
I've published poems, but I'm just working on finishing a thesis right now. So, and I'm hoping that to see Kathy sort of curate some of the miraculous papers of Dick Danhauer that we have at the Egan Library in the role that she's serving as an executor of
I'm
sorts.
A literary executor for Dick and Nora Danhauer mm-hmm. on the English side. James Crippen is the literary executor on the Clinkett
right.
side.
Well, it sounds like, just listening to you talk, it sounds like authors, maybe like athletes, you know, you need other authors around you who are doing the work to kind of give you a little nudge to keep those projects alive and keep them going.
Sure.
So maybe tomorrow night could be some inspiration
for
all of us.
For everybody that's got work in press this
right.
year, we look forward to celebrating with you
yes,
next year
there is
as well.
An end in sight.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kathy, Jonas. Wonderful to have you on the program.
Thanks,
thank
see
you.
See you tomorrow night at the library.
Thank you.
This station comes from Copa, a handcrafted ice cream and coffee shop serving fresh roasted organic Sentinel coffee. Copa is participating in Juno's Restaurant Week now through Saturday. More at coppa.biz.
Join me, Troy Quinn, and the Juno Symphony as we seek to soothe the soul with a program of divine and inspiring music on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at JDHS. Vaughan Williams' familiar English folk song suite sets the mood as we travel across Europe to a work inspired by the majestic Swiss Alps. The full orchestra and the Juno Symphony Chorus, along with the Juno Douglas High School Choir, are assembled to play Fauré's life-affirming masterpiece, Requiem, featuring world-renowned soloists Anita Robles and Jarrell Williams. Tickets are at Hearthside, The Jack, JunoSymphony.org, and at the door.
Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now by another Julie, Julie Nielsen. She's representing the Healthy Alaskans Coalition, and they're presenting a film this evening, 5:15 at the Gold Town, called Partners in Healing. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. So this is a film that explores healing partnerships between Western and alternative medicine. Can you tell me a little more about that? Or
yeah, I mean, really basically, health as we know it is really a lot, the body and the mind connection.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Katsky, who is with us on the line, is a lot more familiar with the driving theme of the film.
The content of the film. Okay, Mary Katsky, you are the producer of Partners in Healing?
I am the producer. Thanks for including me today.
Oh, thanks so much. Tell us where you're calling from.
I'm calling from Anchorage. I've been making films in Alaska for over 30 years. And this particular film is probably my 35th film, and it's my fifth film about women and wellness in
wow.
particular. But this applies to anyone who's facing a health crisis.
And does it have a particularly Alaskan focus, or is it more general?
It does.
Okay.
It does, because we have such a beautiful backdrop, and we tried to incorporate nature from southeast all the way up to Fairbanks in the film, and because nature and healing go hand in hand. And then our practitioners who are featured in the film, such as Dr. Gary Ferguson or Estelle Thompson from the Kenaiksi Wellness Center, are Alaskans. We have a really high percentage of alternative, or I should say integrative practitioners in Alaska. I believe they're drawn here. And so it's wonderful wealth of resources that we have to draw upon.
Well, you just said two words that really jumped out at me. First, alternative, and then integrative. And it seems like that really sums up the changing paradigm in medicine, and this, the title, Partners in Healing. It seems like in the past, Western and alternative medicine were at odds. Now things are coming together, and maybe how did that happen, and how did it happen here in Alaska?
Well, one thing that, and I'm a survivor myself, that going through traditional Western medicine treatment for breast cancer, I did many, many things on the side, and this was 25 years ago, and we didn't tell our doctors what we were doing because
wow.
we were afraid of being shamed or blamed or poo-pooed in some way. And now it's patient demand, really, that's making this happen, because these treatments and modalities make you feel better instead of worse, which is something about Western medicine. So many times you come out of your treatment feeling worse than when you went in, and that's not a good thing.
Right. Right. And yeah, there you can't, you have to follow the light. You can't I'm feeling better, that is usually the bottom line.
Right.
Or it should be. And you suggested earlier that the focus of this film is on particularly women's health issues, is that right?
Well, our funders are both affiliated with breast cancer. One is the Alaska Run for Women, based here in Anchorage, and then the other is the Alaska Breast and Cervical Health Partnership. And so by its very nature, most of the people in there are fighting cancer, but not everyone. And what you learn as you go along in the wellness journey is that almost all dis-ease and illness are connected on a fundamental level, if not on an obvious surface level. And I think Dr. Lynn Freeman in the film gives a really good articulation to the difference between complementary, alternative, and integrative. Integrative says we're going to take the best of everything and make our own personal recipe for wellness.
Right. Well, and how does sort of the market functions of the medical industry impede or assist in that? I mean, are there still barriers with getting these kinds of treatments authorized through our insurers and all of that?
Well, this is a challenge. Now, more and more insurance companies are including it because absolutely, when you look at the numbers, they're saving money by letting their patients have wellness treatments, to have a massage or a craniosacral or a meditation session is going to ultimately save them money. And that's where it comes from. It's patient-driven, and also they realized they were losing revenue by people going outside the hospital system. So now you'll find that there's many of these things are available right in the traditional hospitals.
Right. And Mary, if you've made that many films, this is obviously, you talked about your own personal stake in this topic. What do you hope those of us who are able to see the film tonight at the Gold Town, we will take away from it for ourselves?
Well, we did questionnaires at several of the screenings. We've screened around in other parts of the state. And one of the questions is, what did you learn or what did you not know before the film? And there's not been a person yet who didn't have something for that line. And some of them have not tried anything, not even a massage before. Mm-hmm. There are 12 or 13 different modalities in there that are shown and talked about. So I hope that people will come out of there with new ideas for how they can help themselves or help a loved one who's going through a medical crisis or a health crisis. Just meditation and exercise, two really simple and cost-free things you can do for yourself, make a tremendous difference. They've shown that if women just walk 30 minutes a day, they reduce their breast cancer risk by 50%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I wonder, when I said paradigm shift, is there something that has to happen, a shift within us, and is it a little bit scary to think that no longer can I just go to my GP and get a prescription and my problems are solved? That sounds like there's a lot more on me to do this research, and I can't assume that when I come out of the doctor's office that I have all the information I need to be my healthiest self. That's a little scary.
Well, you're absolutely correct, but I like to think of it as empowering, because when you're hit with an illness, it seems like so much is out of your control, and you are afraid, and you don't have the information. But when you start to take these steps, it is a tremendous boost to your health and to your mental well-being to know that you're taking steps to make yourself well. The scariest time for most of us is between the diagnosis and the decision of what we're going to do about it.
Right.
That window, it's anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, is terrifying. That's where the sleep deprivation happens, and because you just don't have a plan. And this is encouraging you to go walk away from the model of you fix me and toward the model of how are we going to fix this together.
Excellent. Okay, Mary, so that's Partners in Healing, and that's, again, showing this evening, 5:15 at the Gold Town. Let me bring it back to you, Julie Nielsen, Healthy Alaskans Coalition. So what are some of the other activities that your organization does to promote health here in our home state?
Yeah, well, we're interested in just basically having an open conversation about the problems with healthcare system right now and how it might be improved in the future. And so really it's a combination of educating people, but also just hearing what people have to say. So last year we had our member Carla Hart brought an expert on single-payer systems to town, and so we got to learn about that. And we also had a mudroom-style event where people just got up and told their stories. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line, you know. You might be doing okay with the health system as it is, but your neighbor might not.
Right.
So it's just keeping that conversation public about what's wrong and also how we might fix it. And one of the things I'm interested in is having a system that really has a priority on health and holistic health. And that's where this film kind of comes in. It's a focus on health.
That sounds like sharing the story, sharing the dialogue. That's kind of a new thing too, because back in the day, if you had cancer, we didn't talk. Certainly, cervical cancer, breast cancer, we didn't talk about it. And so, just being able to share stories becomes very empowering.
Yes, indeed.
In the patient to patient communication, not just doctor to patient, is another really healthy change. Well, thank you both ladies for bringing this to our community. What an important contribution. And I hope you get a good crowd at the Gold Town tonight. That's at 5:15 p.m. Is there an admission price?
We're asking a donation of $5 to $10 just to cover the cost of the film.
Okay, excellent. And Mary Katsky, congratulations on this latest film, and best of luck to you and future projects.
And thank you for letting us talk to your listeners.
All right. Be well, both of you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks to everyone who submitted photos to our first community photo show, Folk Life. We have pictures of fiddlers, guitarists, images from the main stage and all over Juneau, celebrating the Alaska Folk Festival. Please join KTOO for a First Friday reception on April 6th with live music from Avery Stewart, kombucha tasting from Alaska Probiotics, and food from Pucker Wilson's. Doors open at 4:30 on First Friday, April 6th at KTOO.
Jacket is her armor, as are the heavy boots on her feet. So many hours spent walking along desolate streets. She finds comfort in the way the apartment building slowly passed by. To jump is the only way to fly, the only way to fly.
Listening to a Juneau afternoon here on KTOO at 34 minutes past the hour. We're joined now in the studio by Ben Huff, Mo Michaels, and Annika Ord. They're here to talk about the Juneau Icefield Research Project. But before we get to them, let me talk about the music you were just listening to. That was Avery Stewart. He's a Juneau-born bred musician. His recording Streetlights. He's going to be here at KTOO playing for First Friday, starting around 4:30 p.m. I understand there's a art display of some community photos, Folk Life, and a kombucha tasting. So pretty much all else to do is hold hands and sing Kumbaya. We got the whole public radio community thing going there tomorrow night. But for now, let's talk to these folks about the Juno Icefield Research Project. Ben, Annika, and Mo, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so for anyone who is maybe has no idea, what is the Juno Icefield Research Program? Tell me about it, Ben.
So it is essentially a research organization, a field program with, I guess we've had some high school age students, but mostly undergrad students that are involved in research, a field study program with faculty from all over the country, students from all over the country that spend about 8 weeks traveling from Juneau to Atlin, B.C. By ski, and they do research projects along the way and study the glacier and the ice field and climate change.
So it's mainly ecologically oriented research you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And Mo and Annika could probably speak more to the actual program itself. They're both staff members, so their role is they travel that entire stretch with the students, so they're sort of embedded with them dealing with research and with transport and the whole sort of the whole thing. Yeah.
So I'm thinking of kind of like imagining ice field, people on skis. Like I sort of have I'm thinking of like that movie Everest with disasters happening. So what don't I know? What is the real deal now that you've lived it? What's it like?
Well, we start here in Juneau, actually, right up Blackerby Ridge is Camp 17, and many people may have hiked up there. And we do start on skis. Some of our students have never been on skis before, so we start by taking them through a safety course, and they learn to ski if they haven't, and then we ski traverse across the ice field for 6 weeks with those students, staying at different camps that we have up there that are permanent camps leased through the Forest Service, and then they will do research at each of those camps, and then we'll do another long traverse to the next camp. And we'll repeat that process, and then eventually we'll make our way off the ice field into Atlin.
Okay. And what are you eating? What are you drinking? How are you sleeping?
Yeah, so it's quite an operation up there. The program's over 70 years old, and each camp has a number of buildings. There's bunkhouses for students and staff, researchers, there's a cook shack, a library. So it's a little more plush than you might expect crossing an ice field. We get helicopter support the whole way.
Nice.
So we have scientists rotating in and out. We do food orders through Juno. A really wonderful logistics person.
Food orders, so I can have a pizza delivered?
You know, that has happened before.
Holy ghost. I need you.
One pepperoni, please. Usually, it's like thousands of pounds of Costco canned vegetables and beans and meats. A couple times for every camp.
Right.
It's quite an operation getting all the food and supplies.
Sounds like an incredible program. And I understand there is an opportunity tomorrow night, First Friday, to learn more about it at Amalga Distillery. So tell me what's going to be happening there.
Yeah, so I'm faculty on the ice field. I'm the only arts faculty. Everyone else is science-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been up there for the last couple of years. There's an artist in residence, Hannah Mode, who's a San Francisco artist. And her and I will be sharing work that we've made on the ice field during our time up there. So part of our role in being artists in that space is to sort of help the students think about the landscape and sort of synthesize their ideas in a different way, right? They're very involved in thinking about it from a scientific perspective. And as artists, we're sort of helping them or empowering them, giving them tools to think about it in a different way, to see it in a different way, to sort of articulate it when they go out into the world, to wherever they came from, sort of as ambassadors for the space, or to go back and to try to articulate what the place is outside of that paradigm that they've set from a scientific standpoint. We sort of hopefully give them tools. So it's about showing some art that Hannah and I have both made during our time on the ice, but then also Mo and Annika will be there, and other current and former staff will be there. We'll be answering a lot of questions. We'll have information. And it is primarily a fundraiser, right?
Okay.
So Annika talking about, you know, the food and the logistics and the helicopters and, you know, everything that it takes and the huge amount of staff both on the ice and off the ice. It's a big, lot of moving parts, expensive program. So we're hoping tomorrow to To show Juno a little bit more what it's about and to give some information and to share some art. There'll be prints for sale see if we can sort of help the program out here locally.
Great. And Amalga Distillery is always a fun place to hang out.
Yeah.
Whatever's going on
right.
there.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, this makes it, just before you all came on, we had guests talking about the integration of Western and alternative medicine finally coming together for better outcomes. Sounds like science and art, same thing, coming together. What do you as an artist, Ben, gain? And maybe if you want to speak for Hannah Mode as well, you could be making art in a comfy, heated studio somewhere. Why drag yourself up to the ice field? What do you derive from it?
Everything. I mean, my own work, and I think I could probably speak to Hannah to some degree. My work is about being out in the world, right? It's about that, this place that we call home in this natural landscape, and sort of the overlapping of people and how we use the landscape, how we are influenced by it, how it informs what we do. For me personally, I mean, I could go up on the ice and spend time and make landscapes, and I mean, it's a fairly easy place to access. For me, the thing that makes it interesting photographically are these students, right? These students that are so interesting and full of resource and faculty, right? And they just have they're starting their careers of sort of understanding the place, and me being much older than them for the most part, I sort of see them as being our future understanding of that landscape,
right?
And they activate it in a way that I couldn't find on my own, right? I mean, JIRP is the access that they've afforded me with making my own work apart from being faculty is tremendous, right? And
right.
I think that the parallels between the artist and the scientist are I think they're pretty profound, right? I mean, it's still this need to go into a landscape and collect data, collect information, and try to interpret it for understanding,
yeah, tell
right?
The
like
story
it's the
of,
same,
of it.
You know, they're different ends, but I think what fuels an artist and a scientist, although they're doing different things, the fuel or the ambition, if you will, of those two people, I think are really similar, right? And it's my wife's a scientist as well, right? And it's I find, although it's so incredibly foreign to me, I feel a kinship to some degree, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that spirit of investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And for Mo and Annika, how does having artists working alongside you, how does that inform your work or inspire? Or?
Yeah, so I've been up there. This will be my fifth season this summer. And since I was a student, I also practice art and drawing. And so as a staff member, I've tried to bring, before we had Ben and Hannah up there as dedicated artists, I tried to bring in field sketching and different outings to get students to slow down, look around them, observe the landscape, ask questions, and really reflect on their time up there. And so that's been a really important piece for me as well. Kind of trying to integrate both like the science we're learning about the futures and the place we're in, but taking those moments to slow and really look, because you can see a lot when you slow your eye down to the pace of your pen or your pencil. And it really informs, I think, your perspective up there. So I really see the two being very well married.
Excellent. Anything to add?
I would just say that I think it goes a long ways, too, once we get back to town or off the ice, being able to take that experience that you've had and have the artwork of Ben or Hannah or other people or the sketches that you've done up there with Annika teaching a sketching class, for example, then you could communicate that to your family, to your friends, to your professors, to your job, and it's almost easier for them to understand if they have that visual to go along with it, and it I think that connection is very important, that piece of science communication coming out.
Right.
And I think that having people like Hannah and Ben up there is really important to that.
Because it must be a little bit unreal. I mean, it's such a otherworldly environment. You're up there in the summer, right? But you're surrounded by snow and ice. And so to have, like you say, have that tangible record to say, yeah, that was what it was like. That was where we were. Is there a sense of
wanting to capture it, bottle it, because as we know, our world is warming. The ice field it feels very eternal to us and very ancient, but it may not be forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly something to that. I mean, you know, the medium that I've chose to work in, photography. I mean, that's sort of baked into that medium, right? I mean, it is a documentary medium, mm-hmm. And it is about time. It's about reference, you know, and it's. It is. I mean, you do sort of distill it down to a real sort of minimalist palette in a lot of ways, right? It's, you know, it's a lot of grays and whites and blues. But sort of to Annika's point, this idea of slowing down and really taking in the space. I think it's wonderful that those students get 8 weeks in that landscape, right? Like it's enough time, I think, to eventually forget about everything else, right? I mean, it's such we don't get these days the opportunities very often to be truly cut off, right?
Present,
you know,
right.
When
there's no cell phone. You're not Facebooking up there.
No, not at all.
So the students and I guess the staff too, they write letters to their family, right? And
when
the helicopters come and do food drops and bring faculty back and forth, they'll bring letters into town and the local manager here will mail those letters. So
I mean,
the communication,
that.
everything is sort of slowed down and stripped to necessities, which is, I mean, just that alone, I think is really unique in today's environment.
Right. And then you come back to town in the middle of tourist season. What's that like, the reentry?
Oh, man. It's tough. It takes a while for everyone, I think, to reenter after 6-7 weeks up in that landscape that's just so huge and inhuman in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. even though we're studying kind of the impacts that humans are indirectly having up there. But yeah, it's definitely a shock to take a hot shower,
stimulation.
To see a dog again.
There's always a post-gerb transition for everyone, and as staff we've experienced it a few times, but we definitely have to remind our students that you have to be gentle with yourself and take the opportunity to observe your surroundings when you come back and sort of take that perspective you've gained and implement it in your new life. It's definitely a transition. It's very different.
What an amazing job. Well, I look forward to learning more about it tomorrow night. Amalga Distillery,
yep.
First Friday. What time do you think you'll start?
About 4:30.
4:30 at the distillery there.
We'll be there.
And you can learn more about the Juno Icefield Research Program. Ben Huff, Annika, Mo, thanks so much for joining the program today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And one last thing, we are looking for more students this year. So if you heard this and are interested and are around.
Sign me up.
Yeah, sign up.
Sounds
come
incredible.
Check out our website.
JunoIcefield.com.
JunoIcefield.com. Great. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. And listen, Ice is back with a brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly, flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights, huh, and I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Tears, rest the speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom. Deadly, when I play a dope melody. Anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it, you better gain weight. Better hit the fools out, the kid don't play. And if there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it. Just drove by, kept on, pursuing.
going to the next stop. I bust a left and I'm heading to the next stop. The block was dead, yo, so I continue to A1A. Beachfront Avenue. Girls were hot, women left in bikinis. Rockman lovers driving their bikinis. Jealous, cause I'm out getting mine. Shade with a gauge and vanilla with a nine. Ready for the jumps on the wall. The jumps acting ill cause I'm full of eight ball. Gunshots ranged out like a bell. I grabbed my nine, all I heard was shells falling on the concrete real fast. Jumped in my car, slammed on the gas. Bumper to bumper, the avenue's packed. I'm trying to get away before the jackers jack. Police on the scene, you know what I mean?
Thank you, Vanilla Ice. You are listening to A Juno Afternoon here on KTOO. I'm Julie Copins, joined in the studio now by John DeCherney and Dana Grammer. They're here to tell us about a fantastic upcoming event. It is CLINK, C-L-I-N-K, exclamation point. It has nothing to do with being incarcerated, as John explained. So what is it?
CLINK is an annual wine tasting sponsored by Specialty Imports, who we both work for. It's at the Arts Council. And it's a benefit for the Arts Council. It is from 5:30 to 7:30 tomorrow on Friday. And we are pouring 44 wines, I think, from in all varieties and styles from all over the world in a variety of prices. So there's something for anybody's, for everybody's taste.
44 wines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can handle that, John. How do I narrow it down?
It's a good idea if you sort of come with an idea of what you might want to taste. And, you know, if you don't like Chardonnay, then, you know, don't try the Chardonnays. Try something else. But there's going to be something for everybody. And when you come in, take a look at all the things we're pouring and maybe make a list of what you might, you know, might be interested in, or a couple of new things. Like we have, you know, some things that are like you probably wouldn't buy just off the shelf. Like there's a blend of Syrah and Grenache from Spain, you know, that isn't exactly a household word. Or there's also a sparkling, lightly sweet pink wine from New Zealand that's always a crowd pleaser. And a couple wines from the fruit-based wines from Bear Creek, which is the winery in Homer. And it's run by an incredibly nice family. And people are always kind of resistant because they're fruit wines and they have a preconceived notion of what they're like. And they're absolutely delicious.
Surprising.
And they're just worth trying.
Okay. So, Dana, you're from the Anchorage Office of Specialty Imports. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay.
I just flew in today.
Excellent. And so do you have your own kind of wine tasting strategy or maybe some pro tips for amateurs like me?
Yeah. Well, I think John probably said as good as I could say it is, you know, It's nice to go and taste things that you like, but the one thing I would suggest is to step outside of the box and try some things that maybe you haven't tried before, or maybe you've decided that, you know, for instance, John used Chardonnay. Some people have decided they didn't like or don't like Chardonnay, but you haven't tried all the Chardonnays, and there's no certain one way to make Chardonnay. A lot of different producers make them different ways, so don't be afraid to step out there and try some things that maybe you've decided you haven't liked or haven't tried before.
And so when I attend CLINK, is it a flat fee, or do I pay by the taste, or how does it work?
It's $30 a person and $50 per couple. And like I said, it benefits the Arts Council, which is run by my wife. So I'm not sure who else I would throw a big wine tasting
Nancy is here to tell us more about some arts events. So we'll shift to Nancy in just a second. But just so again, for CLINK, so this is at the Jack, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Friday. That sounds like that's an incredible deal, actually.
It is. There's also food by the Breeze Inn, and there'll be music. And I also want to echo what Dana said in a little bit. Like, if there is something that you like, there's probably going to be a variety of styles of that. Like, I'm using Chardonnay as an example. We're pouring three. We're pouring one that's fairly what you think of when you think of Chardonnay, that big, rich, fat California oaky style, but also an unoaked one from Oregon and one from Washington from a small winery called Janik, which is absolutely one of the best Chardonnays I've ever had. And I'm not a big Chardonnay fan, but there's a couple wines there that I think are worth it just for the price alone. Two in particular would be Segacio Zinfandel and Domaine Druin Pinot Noir, which I think are among the five best wines in the new world that we sell.
Right.
So there's a couple of personal favorites.
Now, conventional wisdom is you start with maybe the lighter wines and move up to the heavier. Is that kind of the way to do it?
That's pretty much the standard way, yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I think John did a fabulous job of lining out the room that way, and it does kind of take you from kind of starting with the bubbles going, you know, with some of the crisp, clean whites, and then, you know, maybe moving into some whites are a little oakier, then lighter reds, medium body reds, and then the big boy Ritz.
Okay, so so things are even arranged physically to facilitate that kind of progression.
And you usually don't see that at a wine tasting, so I think that's really unique and smart on John's part to set it up that way.
You are helping us out.
A lot of times when they have wine tastings in town, they're broken up by the different distributors, which is fine because, you know, we're competitors. We're not going to stand next to each other. But every year I do one tasting in Petersburg at Keto's Cave, and the owner has it lined up the way we're lining it up, where it goes from lighter wines to heavier wines. And I think that's really user-friendly. I think that gets, you know, it gets you – I mean, you don't have to, like, run to each table to try all the Sauvignon Blancs, for example, or run to each table to try the Pinot Noirs. It's, like, a much more logical progression in terms of taste.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to start the weekend by toasting the arts at the Jack with Clink. And then what else do we have going on, Nancy? A few arts events,
well,
I understand.
It is First Friday, so they've got a ton of things to do. And actually, it's Thursday, so you got a few things to do today, like Pub Theology and the Sound of Soul out at this is your last weekend to see Cyrano, by the way.
Oh, so, excellent production.
Yes, excellent
Highly
production.
Recommend that.
Highly recommend that. And you've got the symphony, so you're going to have to carefully time everything. One of the things I will mention about Clink is oftentimes when people go to the wine tastings, it's a little frustrating because you place an order and then you don't see your wine for a couple weeks or something. We're doing a wine auction as well, so you can actually pick a wine. If there's a wine that you like, you can. There's a wine buy now option at the wine auction part of it. So, for example, the Segacio, I think, will be a wine auction item. So you end up taking a little bottle of wine home if you like to do that. First Friday, there's in the morning, it's UA Fisheries Day at the Lena Point, a student symposium out there. We've got the UAS student exhibit is going up right now in our place over at the APK in the woods with George Gress. He makes all these fabulous guitars. He's doing a show of that. Let's see. Let's just get the actual PSA out about here. The Alaska Museum is also having Agents of Discovery, a scavenger hunt phone app launch.
Fun.
That sounds like fun. Everybody likes, there's an app for that, you know. And COPA's having a pop-up art show with local Juno artists and probably ice cream, I'm sure. Hearthside Books, a book signing with David Ramser, who used to work here years and years ago with John and I a long time ago. But he has a new book called Melting the Ice Curtain, The Extraordinary Story of Citizen Diplomacy on the Russian-Alaska Frontier. And he'll only be here for First Friday.
And if I may interject, he spoke at my Rotary Club on Wednesday, and it's a fascinating topic. It's really worthwhile.
So stop in and say hi to him and check out the book. Annie Kales has Robert Fletcher, Mandy Heck, and Colleen Gold. Robert is a woodworker. Mandy does artwork, and Colleen does jewelry. So, you know, I will just side note, Mother's Day, we'll pass along here. Sketch Studio is bringing Nicole Bauberger, Many Ravens, and she's from Whitehorse, and she's going to have a week of classes and an exhibit of ravens at the Sketch Studio. For those of you who haven't been to Sketch, it's right behind is Kenny's. It's not Kenny's anymore. I lose track. But
it's downtown.
It's up Main Street and partway there.
Well, Nancy, I'm going to have to interrupt. We are out of time.
So you have to go to jahc.org and see all the stuff to
go
do,
to
but like I said,
calendar.
Theater, symphony, Clink, ballroom dancing,
Juno's
also
talent.
Juno's Got Talent. Oh my gosh, there's
Thank
more.
You.
Bye.
Thank you all. Have a great arts weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Juno Afternoon, and have a wonderful Juno evening.